Any comments or questions?
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Yes.
When you told the story about Cosmo at night from coming to Ellis Island, it says, all beliefs. And then also in the prayer, and then you say, may we recognize the in all
names and forms.
I always think, there, when I read that, there's always a postscript in my mind. Some of these names and forms seem like more coherent, more, I don't know what to say, less contradictory, less something than others. There's always just a postscript for me, like, yeah, but.
Huh.
And so, you know, and I know, like, there's a more full revelation, more, there's deeper and less deeper views of reality.
And I think that that's true. I mean, I think that that's why it's so beautiful to study. If everyone is interested in, you know, taking up any path, which is, I think, first of all, let me say this. I think any path singularly leads to the same place. So one doesn't have to study vastly a number of different paths. Although I know you have that interest because of your degree in comparative religion and your studies. But at the same time, that when we do study the different religions and experience them, we start to see how much they can be alike versus how much they can be different. And I think, you know, all those holy names and forms as Rama, as Krishna, as Shiva, as Buddha, as Abraham, as Solomon, as Zarathustra, as Moses, as Jesus, as Muhammad, and in all those holy names and forms known or unknown to the world, it helps us become sensitive to the fact that different beings that manifested in human form all brought a message, the divine message, that was specific at a specific time and in a specific language to a specific culture and people. And how can there be any argument with that? But yet there is. And some of us have an attunement, you know, we just feel tuned in to certain, you know, messengers and maybe not so much to others. And that's okay. You know, Umchak Rinpoche, who was visiting us, we were talking about that, and I've had this discussion with other lamas about the fact in Tibetan Buddhism especially, we see that also in Hinduism, a little bit in Catholicism, where you have this pantheon of deities or beings that you can tune to, and it's like, oh my God, it could be so completely overwhelming. Where do you begin? But the thing that is always said, and Rinpoche and I had this discussion, it's like just one, a very deep relationship with one, is like the key that opens the beautiful box to everything else. So, you know, and there's those stories. We have it in Buddhism, you know, the monk that just couldn't seem to learn anything was given the duty to just sweep the floor, you know, to see the, and just shine that floor, and through that got illumination. Or the story that an icon tells is about the little boy that just wasn't a very good student, and he felt so embarrassed for not only himself but his parents. He went to the forest to kind of live alone, and he can only learn the first letter of the alphabet. In this is, comes from Arabia, so the vertical stroke, which is alif, is the first letter in the Arabic alphabet, and so he just studied alif. One, you know, like the singular stroke, but from that, he could see, like, the tree, all the branches came from a singular stroke, and a flower was that way, and then he started to experience unity and oneness from that, just that one thing. And so, you know, there are many examples of that in all the different cultures, and religious traditions of studying one thing very simply. I mean, in Christianity, I think it would be love thy neighbor as thyself. It's a very simple rule. If we study one thing and do it, then that's it. Everything else will be revealed. Did I get us off on a tangent, or did that address things?
Well, I'm saying, what is your postscript? I didn't quite say
I think resonate more deeply.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I don't know if that's an objective thing.
It could be familiarity.
I think also, I mean, the original teachings were probably very distilled at the time they were given, and as they're passed along, and as people do different things, and politics, and the world, you know, all of these things come into play, and then the tradition may essentially have been very, very pure, but there are a lot of branches in it that have lost a lot of that, and most of them hold something of the essence if you look hard enough. But sometimes it seems that it gets pretty diluted.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to see it in some of them.
Or distorted
altogether.
Yeah, that's why I think it's a great point. And that please allow people from Skype if they want to say anything. And this brings us to the point, and again, I know some of you are not familiar with the teachings of Hazar and Icon, but you know, this year is the 100th anniversary of when Hazar and Icon left India to bring this message of universal Sufism to the West. And we're at that point. We're at that point. If we start to change things, we will not remember as the message was originally given. And I think that there are discussions going on at all different levels about this to maintain the integrity. If we diverge, let's be very clear that that's a divergence and not some sort of personal thing because we're in the movement of feminism or inclusion or whatever. Let's be really clear about that because we're in that first 100 years, and those that were there, the elders that knew him, they will not last much longer. They're all in their 90s now. And we will forget if we don't maintain the integrity. And as I said, I think the message is pliable enough that it can adapt, but I think we must keep the sacredness of that original impulse. And there is something about the vibration of original impulses that's very important.
It's also like the keynote.
It is the keynote.
The keynote.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Alima, would you like to go ahead and turn on your microphone? Or would you like me to read what you had written? Alima Petra? Oh, she's not sure how to put on the mic, so...
Okay.
One of the hardest things to learn for me is to stay polite when, for instance, someone makes a nasty remark on women and gets away with it. The paradox of it is that I do not want to speak up, but I find it very difficult to stay polite and not to make it personal, but keep smiling and let it go.
Well, may I say... Sometimes it's also polite to be impolite. I mean, this is the thing. You know, they say the path, any path is like a razor's edge. And it's being mindful. You know, it's like it's very obvious to us when we're in guardians of children or animals to keep them out of harm's way. Well, when people are adults and they're being rude, it's okay just to name it that, but respectfully so. I mean, I don't think we have to keep our heads down and just hunker down and take it either. You know, that's what the Buddhists call idiot compassion. Because there's that whole thing about be compassionate, be, you know, inclusive, be, you know, the path of the bodhicitta bears all. Well, sometimes the bearing of it might be the difficulty in creating a moment of confrontation to create a moment of clarity. But who can judge that if we're operating from our ego? That is the point. What is the intention and the motivation behind the action?
The response.
Yeah, or our response to that, yeah.
And in some ways it's kind of like going to the student who is maybe slacking a little bit and saying,
yeah,
you know, that your reaction.
There's a great story about Merchant Samuel Lewis, who was a student of Khosrow and Nikon, among other teachers. But and this has been conveyed by one of his students. He was an American-born Sufi master, lived most of his, at least his adult life in California, and had a large circle of students. And there was a student that was agitating the group, and he just let the person have it, just started yelling, you know. And then he looked at one of his very close students that was sitting next to him, and he said, "Feel my pulse." Point being, the pulse was just real regular. It looked like he was all upset. He was absolutely calm inside. He had only done that to change the dynamic of the space and to awaken something in that student in that moment. Do you understand? It was a great teaching. Feel my pulse. There was no blah, 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 blah. You know, he wasn't excited. He was being mindful and he was changing something. When we've taken retreats with Lama Surya Das, we'll be doing, you know, days of silent meditation. And he'll go, ha! In the middle of it to see if we're, like, really deep or if the startle reflex is intact. And Buddhist masters will do that, or they'll come up and they'll punch you to see if you just, you can stay with the practice, you know, if you can keep that equilibrium. Get jarred.
Don't try that at home.
Don't try that at home. Yeah. Might get a bone. Someone have something there?
Concerning rudeness in our society, most rudeness and most bullying, and often it's the same thing,
yeah,
are first and foremost experienced as verbal. You know,
yeah.
We're not in a part of the world where people are carrying a lot of guns around. Maybe there's certain pockets where there's more of that happening than in other places.
Mm-hmm.
However, if we can, the old saying of stand up to the bully, we need new skills in doing that.
Yeah.
And if we can bring compassion into that practice, that can heal the bully.
It can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I have another example, and this is a student long graduated. This is in college. And very successful now, will remain unnamed, but he was scary. You know, a lot of lever and a lot of rough, you know, behavior. And, you know, a lot of times if you just look, study, feel long enough, you realize that was the shell. So he was getting close to graduation, and I knew he was talented, but I knew that this behavior and this appearance was not going to bode well for his success. So one day we were on the elevator alone, and I turned to him and I said, "Do you realize if I didn't know you and I was on this elevator with you alone, I'd be really afraid?" And I said, "Is that your intention, is to make people afraid of you? And if you do want to do that, then what are you afraid of?" He almost started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You know, I really think that there's something that you're really afraid of, and you do this as a barrier. And if you could let this down, I think, you know, I think you'd feel that people would be more responsive. And, you know, you're getting an exact reflection of what you're projecting." There you go, the reflection and the projection. And I said, "People are absolutely reacting to that surface, and I don't think that's who you are at all. Well, the whole scaffolding came down. The next thing I know, he's in my office, and it's like, if I get some magazines, will you tell me some things, or catalogs, or things, will you help me change how I dress? I mean, he needed someone to help him, you know? And, you know, and I, and so we did that, you know, and he's ended up being really very successful. But, you know, sometimes it's just taking that step, too, you know, and because he knew I did it because I didn't really care about myself at that moment, I really cared about him. Well, here's the other part. If someone's acting up, and I don't like doing this, believe me. I mean, I can, but I don't want to be the disciplinarian because I think people need to take personal responsibility. But I'll make it a point of calling someone down and say, go in there. And then I'll walk in behind them and slam the door. Now, it may end up in that person's just, you know, needs to talk and is crying, but they're acting out with other people or me. And it's like, okay, now what's really going on? Because I don't have anything, you know, it'll all come out. But the people in that room have no idea what's going on there because I'll always try to let them leave another way if they need to wash their face or gain their composure. The people out there, though, know that they can't be disruptive. You know, it's proved a point in that way, too. Do you know what I'm saying? So sometimes you have to walk that tough line as well. We know that. Yes.
So,
and sometimes I've kicked plenty of people's asses that are sitting in this room, I know. And they thanked me for it later.
So, follow-up from Alima.
Yeah.
So first learn to stay within your center and look to it from an inner calm or indifference.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like knowing if this is yours to do, first of all. I mean, we're not all superheroes that need to go around saving the whole world. You know, save yourself first. Then once you've made an honest attempt at that, then we kind of know. Through that experience, if I would act that way, what would that mean to me? You know, we are human. We have some commonality. You know, if I'm acting that way, what's that an indication of? Am I tired? Am I sick? Am I fed up? Am I frustrated? You know? And then from that, we can maybe touch that part of someone. You know? Are you doing okay? Is everything okay? You know, it can be very disarming. You know, is there anything you need? You know, I like to tell this story about the man selling gelato on the beach in Holland when we go. And he's a very nice man. We've become friends with him. But, and I know some of you have heard this a number of times, but it was an evening. We had gone to an evening program, and I was decided to walk back to my room, which is at the opposite end of the boulevard from where the program was taking place. And they have these gelato stands along the way, you know, like these free-forming stands along the boardwalk. And I stopped, and I asked this man, I said, before I even asked for a gelato, I said, how are you doing? He said, you know, I have been standing here from morning to night serving people gelato, and no one's asked me that. It's just, give me that, give me that. I want, you know how many people I hear in restaurants saying, I want this and this and this. No. Hello, how are you? Has it been a busy day? No human connection. I want, give me this, the language. This is what Murshid was trying to teach us, the vibration of what we say, not what we're saying, how are we saying it, what's the impulse behind it. Anyway, I ended up getting a free gelato, and I think we've had free gelatos ever since. And he really considers us a friend. When he sees us now, he stops everything. He comes out. I met him first, and then later Terry Magita, and Karen Cabrera came with me. And, you know, we do, though. We know he has children, so we say, well, where's the tip jar for the college fund? You know, we always try to give something back. But, you know, he wants to be generous just because a kind word, how generous that is, or a smile, or, you know, so what? Let someone get to the red light ahead of you. You know what I mean? These kinds of aggressions, how they start to keep going. You know, someone wants to get in front of me at the grocery store line, go for it. I'll sit here and breathe. I'll say a prayer. Unless I'm in a real hurry. And then you know what I'll say to someone? I'm so sorry. I'm in a terrible hurry. Would you mind if I went ahead of you? Really appreciate it. And usually people are happy to do that. It allows them to be generous. Yes. Anything else? I have no idea what time it is. It's probably getting late. So sometimes things form in different parts of our being. We're not sure where they've come from or why they're there. The most gross manifestation of things comes into the body. So frequently illness can be an indication of something that's aberrant in another part of our being and manifest in the body. But we might also have a mental condition or an emotional condition or even something that afflicts us spiritually. One of the things to do is to figure that out. It was one of the great lessons, again, that Murshida Vira gave, was to help to diagnose affliction through the use of studying the elements. And she had said to me, one must be able to self-diagnose this, because if not, for sure it will manifest down through the elemental scale into the body as disease, and then at that point, no matter what medicine's given, no matter what treatment's given, unless the illness is dealt with or the inharmonious vibration is dealt with at the place where it began, it will come again and again. And so this is also true of whatever the condition was that arose in the moment in the first meditation. Perhaps it's something that's part of we recognize in a pattern or a behavior or something that we're seeking. You know, maybe we need to be more quiet, more tender, more patient, more tolerant, more understanding, whatever this is, whatever this condition is, and however it's manifesting to us through another person or a situation, one can be assured maybe it's an indication to have a healthy boundary. Maybe it's an indication to become more compassionate towards oneself and another. Maybe it's an indication I need to start to speak up for myself, because myself is also of that divine inheritance, and by doing so, I protect that which is divine and sacred. You know, whatever that is, try to look into the deeper meaning of what is happening. What is the divine impulse? My dear friend Arifa Miller once said, I had a situation where I was feeling very agitated, and we were driving. We were in upper state New York, and we were driving to Woodstock, and she was one of the senior students of Pier Vilayan, and she said to me, she looked at me and she said, Maria, don't you realize that's occurring so you can learn to be more patient? But, you know, all the script was there, like, this is wrong and that's wrong and that's wrong and that's wrong. And she's like, say Yasabur as a practice, which is the patient one, the divine patient. So what is the antidote to this situation that arose? And sometimes we don't know. We can question it, but maybe it's a feeling, or maybe it's something spiritual in nature. But if we can trace through the elemental scale, we'll use the breaths. We'll do them in a bridged form for the sake of those that haven't done this practice with us. But we're going to use the elements to look at those different parts of our being and see if we can get an indication of where this little splinter started, this thorn, so to speak. Is that clear?
Question. Amina, I'm hearing you say, don't be afraid of life's pain because of the great good that can happen.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. There is a beautiful number of teachings in the collection of Hazrat and Icon's teachings that talks about the spirit. And I'm not saying go seek this, but when it arises, to understand it. But there's a vast number of areas in Murshid's teaching that talks about the benefits of understanding and transforming pain and suffering. The worst thing we want to do is get caught in that identity. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a victim of sexual abuse. I'm a victim of rape. Oh, I'm a victim of, you know, people not understanding me. Whatever that script is, we need to re-script that. We need to re-pattern that. Because we are not that. That is something that happened to us. One can say that's one's karma, that's been one's fate, that was an accident of the universe. I don't know what you want to call it. But if we start to identify with that, we are in a box that we will never get out of.
And if we do identify with that, we will become that separate ego that mm-hmm. withdraws more and more
yeah.
and more. And brain science has more to say about this, too.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, that stress attacks various parts of the brain
oh, absolutely.
More than other parts of our hippocampus if it becomes stressed.
That's right.
Ceases to seek out novel experiences or allow novel experiences.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And those parts of mm-hmm. the brain, like that, hypothalamus, gland, the pineal gland, mm-hmm. hippocampus, like you said, those are the things that they're finding in neuroscience are the very things that when properly nourished and stimulated lead to a true birth of feelings of compassion, of interconnectedness with the world. And so, you know, it's vital to our health and way of well-being. These practices help to stimulate some parts of those beings as well. That you know, physically nourish those parts of our brain and stimulate certain hormone production. So the first breath that I'd like to do with you, and there'll be a series of five going from the earth to water to fire to air to ether. I'll just speak a few moments before we do the practices and I'll clarify as we're doing each breath. The first breath is the earth breath, and it corresponds to our physical manifestation of our being. For those that don't know what this sound is, that's Leo jiggling through his tags, through his scratching. Now he's back to sleep. He's such a good boy, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He's a good boy. So when we're doing this breath, we're thinking about an expansion in the horizontal dimension, but we're also looking within our physical body. The next breath on the elemental scale is the water breath. And this motion is a descending motion, like water from it falling from the sky or a waterfall. The natural inclination of water is to flow gracefully. This corresponds to our emotional dimension. The next breath that we'll do, and I'll give you the sequence, but I just want to talk and sort of get this out there vibrationally, is the fire element. And this corresponds to our appetites and our passions. The air breath is, and fire is rising, as you might imagine, like a flame. The air breath moves in all directions. Hazar Nikon talked about it as a zigzag. He even gave the example of like a leaf getting lifted and drawn into the wind, flying about. But this is the realm of our mental realm, our thinking realm. And the last element is the etheric element. This is the unitive element where all things are birthed from and all things dissolve back to. The earth element, again, corresponds to the body, the water to our emotions, fire to our passions, the air to our mental realm or our intellect, and the etheric is neither this nor that. It's everything and nothing. Each breath has its own pattern, meaning it flows in different directions. This is a practice that those of us on the path do daily, or aspire to do daily, I should say. And it is the one singular practice, along with the purification breaths, which are another body of teachings, that are a foundation through which all the esoteric teachings can be understood and practiced. So there's a great deal of importance given to this practice. Now, if you can do no more than when we move from one element to the next, than to maintain concentration on the breath, then do just that. But if you can do more, I feel the impulse now to give the full teaching as it was given by Hazarot Nayakhan. With the earth breath, with your eyes closed, glance as if you're glancing at the tip of your nose, but the eyes are closed. As you do that, you may feel a little pressure at the back of the head. It's natural. The purpose of this is to raise the energy up through the central channel of the spine and to perch it there at the back, the base of the brain, the parasympathetic part of the brain. So you're glancing at the tip of your nose. The breath moves in the nose and out the nose. And as you breathe in and out, imagine that the breath, or feel it, because it really is truly happening. If one concentrates, one can discern this, as if the breath is entering, not the nostrils, but rather the tip of the nose. Follow that breath going through subtly, passing through all of the skull, the skin, the fascia, all of that, all the subtle parts and the not so subtle parts of the brain, and allow the breath to pass through, striking that point at the base of the skull. The breath is in the nose and out the nose. In this element, so bring into your awareness. Now, I'm deviating here by introducing, going back to what we did previously. So the authenticity of the practice is breathing in through that, the glances at the tip of the nose, the breath is passing through that center. Further, Anayat Khan would tell us to visualize an orb of golden light. You might think of the color of amber, honey, a topaz, but it's in the form of light, and it is passing through that part of the tip of the nose and entering you and filling you with that color, the color of earth. If you've been at or seen pictures of the great sands and the deserts of the Sahara, this is the color, this golden, beautiful color. Breathing that light in, filling your being, and when you breathe out, the light at the tip of the nose gets brighter. And then you breathe it in again. Now, deviation from the practice as given by Hazarot Nayakhan. Here we can think about that particular limited part of ourself and just hold it as we're breathing and see if it formed in the earth element, in the physical dimension of our being. Did something happen that created that aspect of limitation within our being. Don't search for answers. Just let things sit naturally. No grasping. Just being with the breath. Subtle awareness on that first practice that we gave and what emerged. The answer will come now or it will come later. Trust that. Just let it be. If nothing more, focus on the breath. In and out the nose. And I should say, for those of you that wish to know the traditional practice as it was given by an icon, he gave this a rhythm to the breath, breathing into the count of four and out to the count of six on a 60 beats per minute measure. So in the very traditional way, it's a rather complex practice, but once one grasps it, it's very beautiful and powerful. Leo, I'm going to ask you to not do that. You come back here. Come on. Come back here. Boy, you stay with me. You stay with me. Now, if you'll lift your awareness to the bridge of your nose, as if you're glancing, you know, it'd almost be as if you're cross-eyed a little bit. You'll feel that the energy, you may or may not feel it, but be assured the energy is rising now. The breath shifts, and it is in the nose and out the mouth. In the nose and out the mouth. This is the element of our emotional being. Is there something in this realm which gave us a rise to the conditions that we meditated on at the beginning of the class? And you're breathing in the nose and out the mouth. And again, it's the breath is passing literally through the bridge of the nose. Trace it. Let that area become open and receptive to the breath to pass through. If you have the capacity to concentrate on another thing, use the color of emerald green or grass green. In the form of light, this is the color of the element water. And allow that element to enter that center and permeate your being, supporting and nourishing your emotional self. Breaths, as given by an icon, are done in a cycle of five each. Here we can elaborate on that a little bit more in each element. Feel the breath flowing downward. It's penetrating through the center, but then it flows like water, gently flowing through your being, which of course is comprised of so much water. Now the next element is the element of fire, and here we cast our glance as if we're looking at the center of our forehead. Again, you may feel a little tingle or pressure there. It's quite natural. If you feel it, so be it. If you don't, that's also fine. There's no right or wrong here. We're merely doing these elemental breaths, invoking the elements, harmonizing with the elements within our being, and also in all time and space. The breath is in the mouth and out the nose, so it's rising like the fire. The color, if you wish to choose to visualize that, is a ruby red and all varying shades, you know, like a light coming through a beautiful gemstone. It becomes all different variations of that color. Now, this is the element of illumination, but this is where we become a bit of a fire handler, and it's a transitional element between the heavens and the earth. It's the central element. This is why we see this element so used in fire pujas in Tibetan Buddhism and Hinduism and Catholicism, where we always have our candles, or Christianity, they have candles, and all the different traditions light candles, indication of illumination. But this too is where the passions reside and the appetites. So sometimes if we tend to be over emotional or easy to anger, it could be this element needs to be balanced. And we transform those aspects of our being into light. Everything is brought to the path. Fourth of the five elements is the element of air. This is, we visualize as if we're looking at the inside of our skull, you might say. We're concentrating at our crown, at the top of the head. This is the element of air. This corresponds to intellect, creativity. So we find that a lot of artists, writers, musicians, you know, they have a connection to this element because of its creative aspect, its intelligent aspect. Air is all pervading. You know, we give these expressions like, wow, I just seem to pull that out of the air. Well, they did. All kinds of thoughts and vibrations are around us. Can we tune to that? Being a master of the air element allows us to hear things, to perceive things clearly. So Nayak Khan gives the instruction to concentrate at the crown, there we see blue, like a deep blue sky, or perhaps a brilliant blue sapphire. And we breathe the light in through that center. And again, we entertain the thought of perhaps the creation of this limited part of ourselves that we were concentrating on in the beginning was created in this realm. Or an assault at that realm, you see. It's not just did it give birth there, but was some level of our being at the physical, at the emotional, within our appetite, passion area, within our thinking, was it assaulted that brought a vibration of limitation into our being? The air element is in the mouth and out the mouth. I'm not sure I told you that. I'm sorry. But we do the breath in the mouth and out the mouth. Said in the teachings, these become our thorns. So it's almost like we're pulling out a thorn at one of these levels so that it doesn't work itself deeper and deeper into one of the elements, bringing itself into manifestation in the body. Think of that. It's a very beautiful imagery he gave us. Rather, using this or whatever it was that created this limited, codified part of our being, that we have the ability to massage it out with the breath and transform it into a beautiful rose, full of beauty and character and fragrance and vibration, through which we can offer to the world in the terms of beautifying one's personality and character. And that doesn't mean to not be powerful. We can be powerful and graceful. So concentrating at the crown center, color blue, breath is in and out the mouth, the element is air. Now, if you cast your glance even higher now, as if you're looking at above your head, there visualize or you may be seeing a beautiful light that's like white light or a diamond. And in that light are all the other colors of red and blue and green and golden tones, like a rainbow. It's rather diaphanous. And we're breathing through that we're looking at that point and breathing from that point. And from above it, you may notice even a more subtle light that's coming down and flowing through our being with all these subtle colors in the form of light, and also cascading over our being. This is the realm of ether. The breath is in the nose and out the nose. And it is so refined that it becomes almost imperceptible to ourselves that we are breathing. We are breathing, but it is more as if we are being breathed at this point. If you can, tune to a very high being that maybe has inspired you, or think of what a yogi might be experiencing in a cave high in the mountains in long states of meditation. That subtle state that might be entered. Feel that. Let that flow down through and in your being, the etheric realm. Know thyself, and thou wilt know God. Know thyself, and thou wilt know God. I usually ask if there are comments or questions, but I feel very strongly that we should leave it at this today. If anyone wants to contact me or or email me or have any questions, call, it's fine. But seeing that the practice was able, people were able to enter the practice, I think, yes? And we don't need to disrupt it with anything mental at this point. Let it just work on your being. Before the closing prayer, we want to be sure to invite people. We have some tea, which is decaffeinated, but might be spicy. I made it so for our cold and flu season. It has ginger in it. And we have some snacks. We do invite people, if you wish, to make a contribution, and be assured none of it stays in this household. It just goes right through to help others. And there's a little basket there, and those that are online, we have that capability there. And the most especially, we want to make sure that if there's any benefit or any wholesomeness here today, that it is sent out in ever-widening circles, flowing forth from our hearts, from this place, touching all sentient beings. We especially remember our brothers and sisters in Haiti and all places where there's strife, conflict, natural disaster. Any being in need, any goodness here that's been created, touch them and support them and nourish them so that they can feel loved and feel strength and feel courage. And let that enter deeply into your being, into our beings, touching whatever part of ourselves is in need of that love, that attention, that support, that courage, strength. Sometimes endurance, and especially wisdom. Wisdom to know and understand life better. Stand, and we'll say the prayer too. But you know, we're not going to hold hands, first of all, because of the cold and flu season, and second of all, it's sometimes good just to have the palms open and receptive. Yeah. Perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth. Open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Now take your palms and let them feel that divine presence flowing into them like beautiful light. And we say the word Amen, Amen, and we pour it over and through our being. Oh, Mm-hmm.